outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the Father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Journey.
Hey, before we get to the podcast today, I want to let you know about another need we have in Kenya. Yeah, I hate to do this. I know your generosity just helped us save the petrol station from some new government taxes. And now they've gone after the water enterprise in Forkland. This pays for an orphanage school and a lot of other needs in that community. They shut it down today because they're requiring all such enterprises to have a special filling machine that automatically tabulates the taxes that they owe. It seems that a number of these things have been underreporting to the government, and so now they've gone to required automation. We need to raise about $37,000 in the next few days to help save this enterprise, this orphanage, the school, and the help that's being afforded so many other people. You can find out more on my blog at lifestream.org. There's a link at the bottom of the podcast notes. If you have anything that you could help us raise this $37,000 and save this enterprise, I'd greatly appreciate it. Now, on to the podcast. Hey, Kyle, this is episode 993.
993.
We are seven away from hitting the magical thousand, which I don't know what that means, but it's kind of a milestone, I guess.
I would say it's definitely a milestone considering the years of consistency, dedication, and time that it takes to do that. There's not very many podcasters out there that I know of that have done 1,000 podcasts.
And listeners that make it worth doing. If you and I are the only ones doing this, we could still talk. We just wouldn't have tape it.
That's true. We wouldn't have to record it. It'd be fine.
Yeah, but people keep listening and keep begging us to continue. So we're actually approaching something I thought we would never get anywhere close to. I thought this would be a seasonal thing. I'd do it for a couple of years and then move on to something else. But it continues to be a fruitful way to help people get relaxed in this journey.
Well, your season was just a little bit longer than what you initially had planned on.
Yeah, it is. And it continues. So what we want to do for our 1,000th episode, we're going to see if we can get Brad to join us, because that'd be fun to catch up with Brad. We also thought it would be fun if some of you who've been with us, whether it's 2 months or all 21 years, if you would send us a brief observation about what the God Journey has meant to your journey, how it's helped you, what are some of the themes that have inspired something transitional in your heart and life. And if you want to send those to us, my email or Kyle's will work, and let us know. We're going to share some of those on the podcast just to get a feel for the trajectory of this podcast, which it's very different from how it began. But some of the themes are remarkably consistent over those 21 years. So if you don't mind doing that, some of you, we'd appreciate it. We'll read what we can on the podcast and kind of reminisce a bit with Kyle and Brad. That's the plan. I haven't shared any of this with Brad yet, so we'll have to see if he's available and willing and open and we could do it.
Wow. It's going to be interesting. I can't imagine having found this podcast 21 years ago. If that had been the case.
You were still in grammar school, weren't you?
21 years ago, I would have been.
High school.
Yeah. Yep. 21 years. Yeah. I would have been a senior in high school 21 years ago.
You might have thought we were heretics back then if you listened to this.
Honestly, I think it would have been absolutely amazing had I have found the initial content that you and Brad were creating 21 years ago, because wow. I didn't know there were people out there that could have a passionate love for Christ and relationship with Christ, excellent community with other people, and not be a regular churchgoer. I didn't know that that was conceivably possible. I wanted it to be conceivably possible, but man, I don't know how I would have responded, because I was going through those were some pretty dark years from my junior year of high school to the middle of my freshman year of high school. Those were some pretty dark years in my life. And so I would have been intrigued to see how I would have responded.
You went backwards there. It confused me. You went from your junior year to your freshman
year. Sorry, junior year of high school to freshman year of college.
Oh, college. Okay. There, I got it now. Okay, that makes more sense. Well, I know I would have thought we were heretics when I was 18. In my senior year of high school, I was headed a very different direction than the way this journey took.
I was seriously considering whether I was going to continue on with my faith or not 21 years ago. That was, I was about ready to take off to college and had been burned enough and seen some things that I was like, I don't even know if I want anything to do with this whole God thing, faith thing at that point. So that summer between my senior year in high school and my freshman year of college was the year that I got invited to go up and share my testimony on stage at a large youth conference. And I got up there and realized that I didn't believe anything that I was about to say. I went up to speak and walked off the stage. So yeah, that was about where I was at in my God journey at that moment.
I never had that crisis, not once in my life. It was always the journey I wanted to walk, but it was definitely laced with a lot more legalism back in the day and a lot of performance stuff and trying to be one of God's special kids and get to the top of the heap in ministry, quote unquote, other things. Just, oh my gosh, the hubris, the things I thought I knew back then, man, that has sure changed.
There was never a pause for you. There was never a point where you were like, is this God thing real over the entirety of your life?
Not in any protracted sense. I mean, I had prayers that went unanswered. So you kind of go, okay, is this Santa Claus? We're playing a game with something that isn't real. Those were very minor glitches in some self-doubt or God doubt over various specific things. But as I've said, I had my first touch with presence probably at 11 or 12 or 10 or 12, somewhere pretty young. And I've never doubted that reality. I knew there was something bigger in the universe than me. And I knew that had personality. I knew it was real. I attached that to the Christian God, still do. So no, I've never had a protracted time of doubting whether this whole thing was real or not. Doubting a lot of the way we do it, and a lot of the people who claim to act in his name, I have had a lot of that for sure.
No, that's fair. It's just, it's interesting because I don't know if it's a generational thing only, or I don't know, because this idea of the deconstruction and the nuns, and we've talked a little bit about all that stuff. And a lot of people that I would say are hovering around the millennials and Gen Zs, there's a lot of very, very rich, authentic faith that is very much a part of those generations. But most of the ones that I talk to that are living that out in a wholehearted way, they had a really dark season of questioning whether there was ever even an existence of a God. And if even if there was a God, would I want any kind of interaction with them whatsoever? I don't know. It's an interesting characteristic. I would be intrigued to get to hear other people's feedback.
Well, I love that God has a way to get past that with people who seek the truth and really seek to know him. He has a way to get past the wildest disillusionments in our own heart.
Yes, he does.
And finding our way to him. Yeah. So anyway, if you have some observations about the God journey, what it's meant to you, how it changed your life, send it to us in an email. We'll include some links on the podcast notes here, or you can post a comment on the blog or a comment on one of the Facebook pages. And we'll kind of pull some of those together and share them with people and celebrate what this 21 years has meant and how it's helped shape people's lives. I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Kyle Rice.
And want to welcome you to the God Journey. And by the way, that episode will be taping around August 8th. So let's say get your comments in by the end of July would be wonderful. Then we'll have time to process some of that. It's vacation after all, so we don't want to work completely over the summer. Anyway, you got a best thing you heard this week, Kyle?
I do. I was actually doing some prep for one of my classes and bumped into a Martin Luther King Jr. quote that I felt like really connects with a lot of the other things that we've been talking about over the last few weeks. It says, "The measure of a man is not where he stands in moments of comfort or convenience, but where he stands at times of challenge and controversy." I really, it tied in some of the political conversations we've had, some of the masculinity conversations that we had. I mean, just if we're not facing some of those times right now, I don't know. I don't know what else to say, because everywhere I look around me, there's some kind of challenge, controversy, chaos, issue that is being faced or at least being discussed. And man, these are intriguing times, and to see how a person's character, how a person's sense of self and identity comes to the surface, is revealed in those times, I think is, man, it's incredibly needed, but I think it can be very disruptive at the same time.
It can be. I love that quote, because it's easy to be a great guy when all in your life is going well and you're on this upward trajectory and you look like everything's being blessed. But when it all caves in on you, whether it's controversy or deep need, someone you love dies, someone you're diagnosed with illness, you're what, that's the measure of a man right there. What are you when the dark time comes? And if your faith isn't resilient enough to walk you through the dark spaces, then what good is it? That's why the whole success deity that we often celebrate in terms of the successful politician or the successful athlete or the successful whatever, so many people in my generation grew up with God more as a success deity. And when that success doesn't come, when your business partner cheats you, when, you know, something bad really turns on your life, you get betrayed by a close friend, what do you do then? What's the measure of your life at that point? And I love that. I think that's powerful.
I also really thought about the book that you're in the pro, you've already, you know, put out the first portion of it, and are working on finishing up the second part. And
I'm this close to finishing.
Are you?
I've got the whole last chapter worked out. I just need to refine it a little bit and then I'll be done. So.
Ooh, that's exciting.
Yeah, I am excited.
But I think that idea of resiliency in those times of struggles, and what does it look like? Again, hearkening back to our conversation about maturity and what does maturity look like? I think it's part of it is that resiliency, that sense of trust, that relational foundation that's needed to be able to endure those challenging times.
Yeah, for sure.
What about you?
Yeah, people are going to hate me for this. Doggone it. I don't even want to tell you where I got this quote from, but you almost spit up your drink there, didn't you?
I did, yes.
I finished a book this morning that someone I've known for a decade and a half or so from New Zealand sent me a copy of a book that he's been writing. And it's honestly one of the best things I've read in the last 20 years. Wow. It's not The Shack. It's not the same as The Shack, but when I read it, the same reality in a different way hits home in your heart. It's controversial. It's powerful, but I can tell you where I got it from, but you can't go read it yourself. At least not at this point. We'll see what happens from here. But my friend's name, Gary, this two quotes I'm going to share from there. One just for fun. And one that I think is really powerful, but the first one is an observation of his childhood. And he said this, there was no safe place to be vulnerable and be met with love. Mm. That's tragic, right? That's the journey of anyone who's been abused, neglected, in some way hurt by their childhood, to have no safe place to be vulnerable and met with love.
Yeah, that's a tough one. I love the quote. I'm just reflecting on it. And the hard part is that often people who've navigated a childhood like that, there's this sense of love, and yet often there's something that's tied to it. So I'm just reflecting on my own story. It was like, there wasn't necessarily a safe place to completely be myself, because I knew that it wasn't confidential. Because when I was growing up, one of the big parts of our family system was you don't share anything outside of the family system. You keep it inside the family system. You only go to family members, etc. And yet, if something was shared about another family member that was causing a major impact in your life, there was no guarantee that that was going to be held in confidence. And so it could get back to them. It could be used and weaponized against you. And so there was always this guardedness of, yes, I am love, but to really allow myself to be vulnerable and to be seen, that was pretty limited for a long time, sadly. And that's a tough space to grow up in.
It is, and it's a tough space to live in. I think, as we've talked about vulnerability recently, it's often true of adults as well. I'm loved when I meet the expectations of people around me whose love I care about. But if I was truly vulnerable with the places I hurt or doubt or struggle, it's not going to be met with love. It's going to be met with a rebuke, advice, which is the worst thing to meet vulnerability with. And it just makes me sad that people don't have that, and they need to find a place to have it, which goes to the best thing I heard this week, which is the second quote. And he says, the best way to interact with the broken, divided, and lost world is not to fix it, but to be with it, awake, loving, and deeply rooted in the true self. The ego wants to rescue, rage, or retreat. But the true self becomes a presence, a quiet, spacious field where healing begins simply because love is present. I love that.
I really like that.
Not to rage, not to try and fix it, to know that if love is present with your disturbed friend, with your depressed acquaintance, with whatever, if love is present, I don't have to fix it. I don't have the right advice. And I know in the Christianity I grew up in, it was always about advice. It was always about quoting a scripture. It was finding a way to fix it instead of just being present with pain until love paints a pathway through it. And that love will be, that pathway will come from inside of them as the Holy Spirit reveals it. We provide the love that gives context to the safety of the vulnerability so that people can see which direction to take and take it. And that's such a different way of being present with the world.
It is.
We tend to want to fix it, and we want to jump in, and we want to rage at stuff instead of just being thoughtfully, lovingly present.
Okay, so this, I think that this best thing that I heard honestly connects with a conversation that I've been mulling over a little bit with Father over the last little bit. And that's the conversation of, what do we do with our prayers about community? Like, so let me kind of give a background preface to this thought.
Sure.
You've talked a lot about finding community, what does it look like to find community, especially as you're transitioning out of an institutional gathering, that is one of the most challenging aspects of making that transition is, who do I connect with? What does that connection look like? How do I build those relationships? Where do we go from here? So Jess and I have been really asking those questions, especially here in Sheridan, as we're building a new space. We've been here for, oh man, we're closing in on 3 years now that we've been here. And usually it takes that like 3 to 5 years of being in a space consistently and intentionally to even start building some decent community. And so that's been one of the big questions that I've been mulling over is like, okay, what does community look like here in Sheridan? So I've been really asking Father that. And there's some insecurities around the home that we're in because it's just smaller. We like to entertain, but it's hard to invite people into the home if it feels congested or tight. So that's one piece that's kind of played into it a little bit. But the bigger piece has been, okay, what does it look like to really pursue community here in Sheridan, and what avenues or what doorways is God opening in the moment? And so I kind of opened this up and I'd ask this of Father. And literally the next day we got invited to go out to the lake with some friends that we had been started to get to know. And in the midst of that, there was some community that was happening. There was relationships that was happening. There was this great invitation. And then it got messy. Some things came up, some dialogue came up in the midst of the time at the lake that moved from relaxing and chilling and hanging out with friends and getting to know them to, ooh, this is pretty dark. This is some heavy content that we're navigating now. And okay, where do we go from here? And oh my gosh, like even just the quote that you described there, I don't know if I handled it as well as I could have. As this individual was sharing some things with me, I was present, and then I started to ask a couple of questions, and their response was, I don't need you to be a therapist right now. I just wanted to tell you. And so I wasn't even sure how to handle it. I was like, well, I don't want to be your therapist. First of all, I want to be your friend, but at my very nature, I'm a curious person. I want to explore, ask questions, etc. But so what do you do as you're transitioning? And it's not the institutional community isn't messy, but as you're transitioning and there's this longing, this desire for prayer or for community, there's this heartfelt desire, conversation with Father of Lord, I want to build community. I want to grow this community. I want to develop these friendships. What do you do when the mess comes in? How do you navigate? How do you handle that? What do you do in a friendship context when you're building community and mess gets presented? How have you navigated that? Especially how has that developed over the years for you as you have grown in just the way that you do community, the way that you do relationship? How have you seen that morph over the last few years of what do you do when mess presents itself in a community that you're just starting to get connected to?
Wow. I don't know that I have a good recollection of a mess. And partly because I don't try to build community. To me, that already adds an agenda to our relationship. Right? So my first thought is I just let friendship grow. I let friendship grow. And part of that is I let them set the pace of it. This is all about slowing to Sarah's pace, slowing to Glad's pace. So now if you're in my life, we just moved in this neighborhood 3 years ago. We didn't know anybody on the street. And now we've gotten to know just about everybody on the street and many people in the neighborhood, just because we walk through it every morning with our dogs and that leads to conversations. The other morning, man, we got stopped in the street by people in cars wanting to talk to us, and people in the park want to talk to us. And Sarah and I are on a pretty, in the morning, we walk 3 miles, and we've got to be usually back by a certain time. So we don't always have time to just stop and chat the morning away. But I always let other people set the pace of that. You can have as much of Sarah and I as you want. And so if I make an observation and somebody were to say to me like, hey, I don't need you to be my therapist or pastor or author or whatever, I would just say, oh, I'm sorry. I don't want to be that either. And I'm sorry if I overstepped. And I just back out to find their pace. And if this is going to become community, for me, community means not only do we share a friendship, but we share a friendship inside our growing connection to Jesus. So I have lots of people that I'm close friends with who are not passionate followers of Jesus, and I'm okay with that friendship.
Yeah,
it becomes community when either because of our engagement with them or something else, or they come to us with already a passionate growing curve in their life in Jesus. To me, that's where community happens easily, because there's questions and thoughts and things people have read, and they're exploring ideas, and the exploring of ideas allows you to explore with them. It doesn't look to you, me for the answer. It's not trying to say, Wayne, what do you think of this? Unless they're asking that question. I listen, and I try to find a space where I can partner on with it. Like I can say, oh, you know, I've had that same thought here. And so I'm partnering with their journey. I'm providing presence and kindness to them. So we've talked about before, where I grow vulnerable, usually they can grow vulnerable. If I've stepped on their toes in some way, then I realize I'm wanting a vulnerability that they're not ready for. And the only way I know how to fix that, if that's what you mean by messy, is, okay, I need to be a little more vulnerable with them so that they realize I'm pretty safe. And that's really easy right now, because if we get into Sarah's story and what our marriage has been through, and we're celebrating our 50th anniversary, but we almost didn't get there, and people are intrigued by that story. And then as one neighbor said to us, man, I don't know anybody that talks that. We just met, and you're sharing stuff that I wouldn't hear from my closest friends. Now, did that mean we overstepped? It might have. It might have been saying, wow, this is more intimate than a brief contact allows.
You just trauma bombed me.
Yeah. So I think I'm always looking for, how is the person I'm talking to responding to this?
Yeah.
And I'm willing to take their pace. I'm willing, because I'm not trying to build community. I'm not trying to form a group in the neighborhood. We're just taking every contact for what it is. One couple we get with every couple of weeks and share pretty, in growing intimacy, what's going on in our lives. Others aren't ready for that. So we're not, we don't have the agenda of trying to form a group in the neighborhood.
I like that. That gave me pause. Don't build community because there's an agenda. That gave me pause because I guess my, the thought that went through my head was, am I trying to build a group or community with an agenda, or what does intention, what's the difference between agenda and intentionality of saying, okay, that yeah, when the, when there's an opportunity for to hang out with friends or community, I'm going to do it. I'm just going to hang out and see where it goes. And I think that's the, in my mind, that doesn't think, I don't think of that as agenda. I think of that as more intentionality. But what are your thoughts on that? Like the difference between agenda versus intentionality, and how can you tell the difference?
No, I'm intentional about building friendships.
Yeah.
I'm not intentional about moving that to community.
Hmm. Okay. So tell me the delineation between that you have between friendship and community. Tell me that delineation.
Well, when I think of a community, it's like neighbors who suggest, hey, why don't we get together every couple of weeks and share some of our journey? That's great. Mm-hmm. Happy to do it. Let's get other people in the neighborhood to come and join us and kind of start a home fellowship Bible study group. That's the difference right there. As we grow in friendship and in community, and that may come up in conversations with neighbors. They may see us, you know, walking across the street from someone else's house. What are you guys doing over there? It's, oh, we're just hanging out. We're sharing some of our faith every so often. And boy, we'd love that too. If that happens, we'll invite them in. But the desire is not to build community as an it. It's to experience community as the vibrancy of a growing relationship. And I have that all over the world. I not only have it locally because of the nature of where I've been and what I do, like this man who sent me his manuscript. I was in their home for a while. We've exchanged lots of email over the years. I feel like I'm part of his journey, but it shocked me, the manuscript he sent me. When he first sent it to me and asked me if I'd read it, I'd say, you know, I'll try and find some time. But I was not expecting what I read. It blew me away. Mm-hmm. That is a pleasant surprise. That comes through years of relationship and knowing some of the story behind the story, because I know him, and for him to be in this space in his life is a gift. It's just an amazing thing. So to me, it's the difference is, now I could take that, let's form a writer's group and people can come and read their manuscripts together online. There's nothing wrong with that. That might be a fun thing to do at some point. But the idea of having to build a group is different than being open to what God brings your way.
See, and I think that's the intriguing part for me in the space that Jess and I are currently in. We both were kind of lamenting because we are developing some great friendships here locally, but for the most part, our community is a ways away, either a fairly long drive or a flight away versus, being local. And so I think there was just that desire, that longing for like, okay, there's some individuals in our life that we are regularly very vulnerable, transparent, open with. We have done life with for a long time. There's a deep level of trust. There's the category of almost those ride or die. You know, if a few of these individuals gave me a call and said they needed something, the response is when and how do I get there? You know, when do you need me? How do you need me? Like, no questions asked.
Those were a lot of questions from those questions asked.
Those were a lot of questions. Yeah, that's fair. tell me what you need. I'm on my way.
There you go.
Yeah. And so I think that there's that, Jess and I both have that shared desire to have a similar level of relational connection that is more local, that is in our proximity. And I think it's intriguing just because when this individual was vulnerable and open and honest with me, there was another gentleman that was sitting with us as we were talking, and the other individual just got up and left. They were not in a space where they wanted to be a part of the conversation at all. And I was like, oh, okay, that just happened. Cool. And so I was just like, okay, Lord, what do I do with this? Because now here we are sitting here in a situation where I'm like, is this the right spot to ask follow-up questions? And it wasn't, because they made that clear. But the closer friendships that I would say Jess and I have been building, they're also amongst people who are in the midst of some pretty intense turbulence in their life, which I don't know what to do with. It's like, okay, are Jess and I magnets to people that are going through some challenging hard times and are needing somebody to walk through that with them? I don't know. That was just a question mark that I had in my mind as I was holding it. But
yeah, at this stage in our journey, because of Sarah's trauma, my cancer diagnosis, and my back surgery, we become a magnet for people who are having crises of faith in moments of extremity in their lives, whether it's sickness, whether it's discovering trauma. And I cherish that. I cherish that our story opens up a place for people to be vulnerable with their story. Now, sometimes when I'm talking to people who are taking me into a very dark place in their life, and it seems to me less like I'm looking for help as I'm venting, and I'm using Wayne as a place to vent.
Yeah.
And I don't mind that. I'm telling you what, people have offered me that in my greatest times of pain. Just, you need to vent on me, come vent on me.
Yeah.
With the friend locally here who told me when Sarah was gone, when you get to rage, come and vent your rage on me. Don't take it anywhere else. It's going to hurt other people. Come bring it to me. Now, I appreciated that. And when I get the sense that what I'm getting from somebody is they're trying to just unload a lot of stuff and they really are not open to the interaction of it, I'll just ask them. I said, I have some thoughts about that, but is that of interest to you? Or were you just wanting to unpack your pain? And I've had people just say, hey, right now I'm just unpacking. I'll say, great.
Yeah.
I don't mind that. I'm sorry you're going through it. I express love and whatever for them. It may be weeks or months later they come back and say, you know, you said you had some thoughts about what I was going through, and now they're ready. They're ready to listen or ask the deeper question. So that to me is what I mean by the pacing. If already you're missing a certain kind of relationship there and you're wanting to find it there, or you're hoping the relationship that's just opening will be the same as that relationship, that's what I mean by the agenda. It's not, it's not that you've got some big thing you want them to do or accomplish, but I'm looking for them to fill a need with me. And that's all right. It's like the desperate guy or girl trying to find a spousal partner. It's the more desperate you are, the least likely you are to find a healthy person to have that kind of engagement with. And I think we can be so needy for community, particularly when people spill out of an institution. They feel like they've had lots of relationships. Those all go away overnight because now you're not safe for them to be with. And then people want to replace that with, how do I find a group? How do I do this? And I say, slow down. Let the time be with Jesus. Let Jesus meet the need for community that you think you have. And then community will open up to you, not as an element of need, but as an element of joy, as an element of endearment. And friendships will come alive. Things will be active. I had saw someone's Facebook post today, some really, really good friends of mine, upstate New York. And they just, her and her daughter, who's grown, it's a mother of her own and all that. They put a thing out on Facebook saying, hey, I forget what day they picked, Thursday morning, whatever. We're going to just have coffee and tea out on our back deck. And if you want to bring something you're thinking about, explore faith in some way, whatever, just come join us. I thought that's a cool invitation. I hope people pick them up on it. And I wonder how we'd put that out in our neighborhood. Say, hey, if you want to explore faith with us without anybody trying to conform it to something else. Just let you explore where you are in faith. Because part of, I think, the joy of the quote I read about being with people as your true self, loving them where they are, is the light of the journey in a context of love will light up from inside them. That's where the Holy Spirit works, where Jesus is already working, even if they're not Christians, quote unquote. Yeah. He's growing inside them. So when I provide the space for love to grow, that's going to help the light to grow. And then we'll see where that ends up. And when you're comfortable with other people setting the pace of that, I think it's much more relaxed. It's less stress for me trying to get it somewhere. and allows me to be present in a way that opens doors into their own life and vulnerability. But that may take months and years.
Yeah. No, that's a good reframe of just presence with people, because I think for me that I don't necessarily feel like I'm a super needy, like high need, like desperate person in that category.
Right.
But I think that's a really good reframe though, to give it, to just enjoy it for what it is. That if there is this like longing for desire or longing for community, deep desire for community that I have an image of in my head, then all of a sudden it clouds or shades what God's doing in the present. Like, so to, especially comparison, anytime you move into the comparison space, then it's going to devalue what is currently there. And that, like, that's a great reframe.
And what it misses is how the relationships you had back there, how they grew, what they were when they started. And you didn't know what they would become. It wasn't, you weren't trying to put an overlay to it, but it became that over time.
Yeah.
What I've been freshly thinking about in our own journey is how much I was schooled in the idea that ministry is creating the environment for other people. So you coordinate a group, you get a group together, you look for a group, whatever. It's all about imposing something on other people. And when I look at Jesus and the Gospels, and I think a lot of what it means to be present in the moment is not having any of that. It really is not, okay, I want more fellowship, so what can I do to get there? Instead of, I'm just looking at the opportunities that come my way, knowing that God is building community in my life through the things that unfold. If I'm present enough to recognize, oh, that person's hungry. That person's not. So I navigate in the opportunities that come my way rather than I'm trying to create those opportunities. And it's been life-changing for me. Over the last couple of years, it's been, because our lives are different now. It's really Sarah's need is what determines our lifestyle and how much we can engage people. And when Sarah's had enough and needs to be calmed and alone, and in terms of us just being more contained in our own home, and there's times when she really needs that for a season, and I'm happy to provide that. So it's caused us to step back and say, okay, so I'm not doing something I should be doing. And what I've come with is, no, just go through life. God will bring the people to you he wants you to know. And it'll happen in more organic ways than putting a poster up in the neighborhood inviting people to a home group or a Bible study or something.
No, I love, I mean, again, that I'm just laughing because I'm thinking about even the idea of at other people's pace. I feel like that has morphed in your language even over the last 5 years.
Oh, and tremendously.
So I'm thinking about that. I'm like, man, yeah, that being at rest and being at peace with the process and the fact that God has the ability to fill whatever need. So whether it's a need for community or a need for a sense of connection or belonging or whatever it might be, he's got a way to answer that. I mean, that is a kingdom born desire to have that connection and to take it to him and say, all right, Lord, I'm handing off the responsibility to you. And I want to be able to play with you in this, swinging back to rest, love, and play. I don't want to be that person who's on 30 different relational dating sites because I just desperately need that to be a reality. And yet, man, so often we perceive that as, oh, well, you know, we're going to do a thing. We're going to build something and the people will come. Instead of saying, okay, where are the people right now? Who are you putting in the proximity of my life right now in an organic way, Lord? And what does that look like?
Yeah. And I think the opportunities for that are limitless. I even just listened to you over the last few months of the connections you're having in the community, the connections you have with students, even if it's building this new program, those are all community type relationships. They're open doors to people that you get to know. And then how do they grow from there? And I've been on a few things here in town. And when I'm on them and I'm just interacting with people and I take an interest in them, that's where usually friendship starts. I don't have a lot of people come up to me going, man, I'd like to know you more. Let's talk more. Let's do whatever. But I let it grow. And then I find people call me up and say, hey, Wayne, I've got some things in my head. I'd just like to bounce off of you. Great. Let's meet a coffee shop or a Diet Coke shop. I don't know why they don't have Diet Coke shops. It's always coffee shops. And not only the coffee shops don't always serve Diet Coke, which is really bizarre. But
because coffee's actually good. Diet Coke, on the other hand.
Yeah, all she gets water at those places. That's why I don't like Starbucks. Starbucks needs to broaden their beverage choices so soft drink people can survive there. But then I find that, again, it's at their pace. That's changed so much in me. It was changing before. We've had that conversation before the thing with Sarah. And then tend her garden, tender, slow down, stop stomping on stuff because you're in a hurry, has been eye-opening to me. And then the whole thing we talked about slowing to God's pace, which is even slower than Sarah's pace at times. And if you're storming through life with hopes, dreams, agendas, whatever, you often miss the subtle doors. I think of Stefan's thing that we talked about back a few years ago, where he was the pathway into this carnival of ministry and whatever, and this pathway to learn love. And he wanted to get in the arena where all the stuff is happening and build a name for himself and do all that. And God just inviting him down a pathway of love. And I think that's why it's easy to miss. I think the pathway to community is the same thing, because we try and fill it with a substitute form instead of letting it organically grow. And when we let that grow at someone else's pace, then it's real and authentic. If I hyped it up, I have to keep hyping it up. I found that out in pastoral ministry. Once you build something, and then people may be all excited when they go, but then in time, it loses its luster. And then you've got to shift from, hey, why don't we all do this, to you have to do this if you're serious about God. And you pull the loyalty card and the commitment card. And now you've moved way beyond endearment. And I think real community, even in places where we've tried to orchestrate it, the real community in those places that has held on for decades are people in which we experienced community with them in spite of all the other stuff we were doing to try and orchestrate it. Now I skip all the other stuff I'm trying to do to orchestrate it, and I just let it organically grow. And to where we go in the morning and say, God, is there somebody you want me to connect with today? And if he puts a name on my heart, I may call them and invite them to, hey, you want to go to lunch someday? We invite a couple on our neighbor. We pass them all the time with our dogs. They don't have dogs. And one day I say, hey, you guys want to get together for lunch sometime? I go, what do you mean? We just love to get to know you more than saying hi on the street. And they were like, yeah, that'd be great. We exchanged numbers. And then I wrote them a text saying, hey, would you guys like to get together? And they went, you know, I think we'll pass on dinner. We'll just say hi on the street. Okay. I don't know what happened. I don't know if they got on my website and went, that's a scary dude. I have no idea. But we still see them. They're very friendly on the street. They stopped and asked us about the Alaska trip and all that, because they've been on a similar trip at some point. And again, when it grows at their pace, and I'm comfortable in the fact that God's given me plenty of relationships to engage with. And most of those are not local. Most of those happen on phone calls and Zoom calls and taking the, hey, let's talk sometime. And I love that. I love the people I'm carrying right now and through some major crises in their life. And the best question I know is the one you mentioned earlier about, what do you need from me? That's something I ask Sarah almost every morning. What do you need from me today? Yeah. Or what do you want from me? And give me a sense so I can help you.
It's such a good resettling, because there are so many different relational opportunities that God's opening doors to around us that are here and local.
Yeah, absolutely. I hear that all the time.
And I think that's the piece that I need to circle back to, is be still my anxious heart. You're in it. Enjoy the process. Like, don't Kyle pace it, you know? It's such a natural tendency to lean into the Kyle pace, which tends to usually be a lot more intense and swift than most people would want.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.